All right, just take a seat. Now, if we hear this phrase Schengen, which is a very small place in where? Which country? Yes, very good, Luxembourg. It's in Luxembourg, and no one knew about Schengen before because it's such a small and not particularly interesting place, but the particular location is interesting because it's very close to the triple border of course, Luxembourg, which is a very small entity. I don't know whether you've been to Luxembourg, but it's really very small. You can just walk around almost. And then it's close to the triple border of Luxembourg, Germany, and France. So this is here. I mean, I can't show you the exact place on this map, but it's you will believe me that this is here, yes? Luxembourg plays a somewhat inflated role in the European Union because Luxembourg has been part of the whole system from the very beginning, together with the other Benelux countries. Belgium, Netherlands, Luxembourg are called the Benelux countries. And together with Germany and France, these were the founders also of the Schengen Agreement. Yes? Who would venture to give me a date for the Schengen Agreement? It's one of the early agreements within the system of the European Union. That's too early. 95. 5 is correct. 1995. And these were the founding fathers of the Schengen Agreement, which was then made part of the European Union law in another 4 years through the Amsterdam Treaty, or Treaty of Amsterdam, in 1999. It's not terribly important to know the dates, but it's interesting to know the dates because this is, in a generation or two, these will be the big dates of European history, you see? Why? The Schengen Agreement is something which we all hoped for in the bad old days of the Cold War. I mean, you are fortunate to have been born. I always say that because I feel that very strongly, that you are so fortunate to have been born after the Cold War and not to have witnessed any of it. But you had to have a passport and you had to have a visa for every single country you wanted to visit. If you went, for example, for a two-day conference or a two-week holiday with your parents or anything to, say, Italy, you see, you had to have a passport ready for the occasion and then a visa to Austria, a visa to Germany, a visa possibly to Switzerland, and then on to Italy. And then they had to be valid, and you had to queue up in front of the embassies of those countries in Budapest. And so it was a torturous thing. And not only was it torturous, but also they sometimes denied the visa. They denied the passport. You couldn't just go. So today, if you just go to Vienna for a short visit, you just take nothing, really. I mean, it's better to take your passport to be able to identify yourself, but on the whole, you can travel freely today in what is called the Schengen Europe. Now, how many member states are today in the Schengen Europe? I mentioned the five founding states, once again, Germany, France, and the Benelux countries that make it up the five. And then today, who knows roughly? What do you think? How many member states are there in the European Union today? 27. That's good. How many member states in the Schengen Agreement? No more. 25 today, because there are some associated members. Not all the members of the European Union are part of it. Notably, one big example is Britain. Yes? And also, to this day, Romania and Bulgaria are not members of the Schengen Treaty, which means that if you live in Romania, you have to enter Hungary as a Schengen country. And that means that within the Schengen Agreement Treaty, and that's the wonderful thing about it, if you are already in one of the Schengen countries with a valid passport and valid documentation, then you can go around freely in the whole area. So once you are in Hungary, you can go to Germany, you can go to Sweden, you can go to Luxembourg, you can go to Spain, anywhere, without further control of your documentation. So once you are inside the Schengen Agreement area, which is most of what we call the European Union, that part, yes, including, of course, Hungary and the members of the new enlargement group that came in 2004, but they became not automatically members of the Schengen Agreement group. So Hungary became a member of the European Union in 2004, but Hungary became a member of the Schengen Agreement countries in 2007 only. And to this day, Romania and Bulgaria, which are members of the European Union, are not members of the Schengen Agreement area. So these are slightly different things. What is the European Union, what area is covered by the European Union, and what area is covered by the Schengen Agreement. Now, what do they want of these countries to make this leap, sometimes giant leap, into the Schengen Agreement? Why the difference? Yes? Well, you have to have a number of things done in your country. That the one thing is air control. Yes, and they put a great emphasis on air traffic and how people come in through airplanes or other things. Another thing is, of course, police control. So the police forces are controlled very accurately, and they can't come in from all kinds of countries. Also, the border control is, of course, very different in a Schengen country and in a non-Schengen country. If you are actually like Hungary today, is by the same token, by the same definition, a member of the Schengen Agreement area, then Hungary has to have a special border patrol force to take care of those people who would come into the Schengen Agreement countries, not just to Hungary. That's the point, you see, that if you are a Chinese person, you would want to come to Hungary, and you would say that, well, I love Hungary, and Hungary is my favorite country. But in fact, you want to go to the Schengen Agreement countries, that is possibly Spain, possibly Italy, possibly the Netherlands, or any other country. Once you are in Hungary, you are, by the same definition, you are already in the Netherlands, or you are in Luxembourg, or you wherever you want. That's why the border countries, and Hungary is in such a position today until Romania will be admitted, that's why Hungary made it a special priority during the Hungarian presidency of the European Union, which is coming to an end at the end of June. But Hungary wanted desperately to make Romania and Bulgaria a member of the, or members of the Schengen Agreement area, because it would alleviate the role of Hungary internationally. Mind you, when Hungary became a member of the Schengen Agreement area in 2007, the European Union gave enough money to add to the border patrol force of Hungary some 6,000 additional people. Now, you know, this is not just a small number, because you have to equip those people, you have to train those people, you have to select those people. I mean, you just can't add any number of people to the border patrol. Now, if Hungary ceases to be a Schengen Agreement border area country, then those 6,000 border patrols will probably go to Romania or to Bulgaria, because that's where the danger is. Of course, Hungary has other borders, and not just Romania. Slovakia is a member, but Ukraine is not. So a lot of people might want to come through Ukraine, and that's a steady way to get into the Schengen Agreement. Once again, Hungary is not just Hungary. Hungary is the better part of Western Europe these days, viewed through the process of visa application, the process of of the whole passport mechanism, how you are controlled, what you are requested to produce as a document. There are many questions put to a Ukrainian citizen at the border that a Slovak citizen is not supposed to answer because he has got this wonderful Schengen Agreement membership. So we have this at stake in Europe, that if you are not strict enough at the border, in the border countries, such as, for example, I would say the border of Poland and Russia. Yes, Russia is not a member of the European Union. So any number of Russians might want to come in through Poland, or Ukrainians through Hungary, or Moldavians through Romania, etc., etc. And you have to be particularly vigilant and try to filter this through the rather rigid border control rules of the Schengen Agreement. I mentioned the police force, I mentioned the air control, I also want to mention the personal data protection, which is one of the most important things to do, that all those countries which allow foreigners into their territory have to produce the particular ability to protect your personal data. I mean, it is one of the most important things and one of the most dangerous things if those things hang around. Yes, your mother's name and your domicile and where you were born, etc., etc. You can build a database out of those for bad purposes also, for fraud, financial disaster, all kinds of things. So this is the responsibility of any new Schengen state, that they are prepared to build up a suitable system for data protection. And then, of course, in connection with this is the fourth point, and that is visas. Yes, you have to produce a visa. Now, you may not know what a visa is because you once again came to the world after Hungary needed visas. Hungarian citizens needed visas. We all queued up in front of these embassies, sometimes in a futile effort. They were closed after 3 o'clock or something, or they just didn't give you a visa for any particular reason. Now, this is all gone, but it's not gone for Ukrainians, Russians, Chinese, anybody who comes from outside the Schengen Agreement. That includes people from Brazil also. A Brazilian citizen would still have to apply for a visa if he would come to Hungary. Yes? And once again, Hungary is the whole area. I could also say, if a person wants to go to Germany, it is very strictly controlled if the person comes from, say, Indonesia. Yes? That is outside the Schengen Agreement, so that those people, and there are billions of people who still need, of course, a visa for the country. Now, the country issues the visa through the embassies or the consulates general of the country that you want to get in. Now, you may want to get to France, then you have to apply for a French visa. And the French may have the right to decline. Yes, they may say that we don't want more foreigners, we don't want more... I'm going to talk about migrations in a second, because that's Schengen is also in connection with migrations into and out of the Union. And that, I think, is very much the point for all of us, because there are plenty of people trying to come to Europe. Europe has a declining population. Yes, the numbers are dwindling away. Most families have just one or two children, which is not enough. Whereas in China, you will have probably 1.5 billion people by 2050. In India, you will probably have, no one knows what's going to happen, but 1 billion for India is the forecast. So that is not going to match the European numbers. The European numbers are currently something like 550 million people. That's half of what India will be in a couple of decades. Not that a continent with less people is not as good or not as productive or not as able to participate in the world economy, but obviously with more people you can do a lot more. That's quite clear. And so if this number will go down, then the replacement would come from countries which want to enjoy the European system, the European economy, the European society, European culture, European education, as you all want to enjoy European education by going through the Erasmus program, which is a European program, intra-European program. And so this is going to grow and, of course, invite a lot of people who would migrate in. Now, here comes the problem of the visa. If you can identify France because you want to study in, I mean, you are an Indonesian citizen, let's say, and you want to study in at the Sorbonne, and you want to go there, and then you have to have a French visa because that's your final destination. Yes, so you don't choose a visa country which is nearest to you or which is at the outskirts of the Union. You choose the country where you are heading to. If you don't know which country you want to go because you don't have a specific plan to study in at the Sorbonne, you just come to Europe to look around. Then you have to choose and ask for the visa of the first country you enter, the first European Union country that you plan to enter. All right, so if you come, say, from Moldavia, then this would be Hungary, because Romania is not yet in. And then you can freely go to Rome or look at any country. Now, the Nordic countries have a passport union, so they became more or less automatically part of the system. And so Iceland and Norway are part of the system. Britain is not yet. Britain has a lot of problems with the union, as you may know. Yes? What system is Britain not a member of? Speaking about the European Union. Very good. The Eurozone. There's no euro in Britain. You pay with the pound, yes? And that is a very strong currency, and the British don't want necessarily to go down to the euro, which is not as good as the pound. It's better than the dollar, but it's not as good as the pound, yes? So you might want to keep your currency. The currency is also a symbol for Britain. So Britain doesn't want to enter the Schengen Agreement and doesn't want to enter the Eurozone. And there are other things which are the British are full of complaints about the European Union. This hurts British national feelings. Obviously, Britain was heading the largest empire of modern times, and as such was really supreme. Today, it's just one of the countries of the European Union. That's not a very pleasant feeling for many Brits who would aim higher. And one such thing is point where they can still object to the European Union is the Schengen Agreement. Now, a little bit about the migration patterns. Now, how does Europe respond to migrations? Because the problem is not that you want to go to the Sorbonne, you. Yes, you can do that. I mean, that's not a problem. Even if a lot of people outside the Schengen Agreement want to study somewhere, that's manageable. The less manageable thing is when, say, dozens of thousands of people from any country try to get into another country. The Roma of Romania, yes, went to Italy, large numbers. The Maghreb countries. Do you know which are the Maghreb countries? This map might help you. It's clearly shown on that map, the Maghreb countries, and where the people from the Maghreb countries go to or try to go to. Who knows? Yes, they try to go to France. And obviously, they are just across the Mediterranean. These are Morocco, Algeria, and Tunisia. These are the Maghreb countries, M-A-G, I put it on. Now, the French are not particularly happy, if I may put it that way, to have a lot of people coming to France. Once again, Morocco, Tunisia, and Algeria. These are French-speaking former members of the French colonial empire. Yes? So that is, there's something natural in that. Once we were part of the colonial empire, your colonial empire, now we want to get in, because this is also our country. The same happened in Britain already much earlier. There was this huge British colonial empire which was dissolved already after the Second World War, and then gradually, I mean, India became independent, and then lots of other countries became independent, and the empire, the colonial empire was gone. And those people who lived in the colonies were always told that they were Brits, yes, though they were living somewhere in India. There were many English people and Scottish people living in India to try and colonize India, and many others in Africa, in British East Africa, etc., etc. So what those people wanted was citizenship in Britain and a possibility to get back to Britain. That was particularly a vivid discussion in the late 70s, early 80s under Mrs. Thatcher. Yes, the conservative government of Mrs. Thatcher. When all these people suddenly said, we are not really members of the Ceylon, today Sri Lanka, community, we are not Indians, we are not this, we are Brits, and we want to get into Britain. And of course, Britain is like a big ship. It cannot be overburdened with all those people. There were possibly somewhere around a billion members of the former British colonial empire. You can't have all those billions of people in Britain. So this is, I just mentioned now France and Britain, but I could also mention which countries had a colonial empire in the good or bad 19th century. Other than Britain and France, colonial empires, please try to think. There weren't too many, but there were some very important. Sorry? Spain, very good. Spain had half of Latin America. Yes, that's why we call those people in the American context Latinos, because they come from Latin America, and half of the Latinos are Hispanics. Yes, those who come from Spanish Latin America. All right, which is the other part of Latin America? Yes, very good. Brazil. Brazil is belong to which country? Portugal. So there was a Portuguese colonial empire, though it had less than Spain, but it had this huge territory of Brazil. So we already added two to our list. We have the British, we have the French, we have the Portuguese, we have the Spanish then. Sorry? Yes, the Netherlands, the Dutch colonial empire, which was immense also. I mean, it had Indonesia, for example, which is huge. Yes, if you really go into... I brought a couple of books to show you at least, because we don't have all the time to go through the details. This is the best in English. This is published in the United States every year, and you can get it at every newsstand, really. It's very cheap also, I think $13 or $14. It's called the Book of the World Almanac and Book of Facts, and it's published for 2011. And the European equivalent, the best European equivalent, is the Fischer Weltalmanach 2011. That's German, but it's also global in its outreach. Yes, the same thing, but it's for example, this year's Fischer, as it is briefly referred to usually, has a special focus on migrations. So if you read German, which I think some of you do, then you can get this particular volume of the Fischer series that's also published year by year. And then if you want a handbook with maps, so you can't carry such a big wall map all the time, of course, but you can carry such a thing, which is called the Dumont series, Die Welt, Atlas mit Länderlexikon. And you've got all the maps in it of every country, and then you've got a statistical and sort of factual summary of every single country. So if you want Indonesia, I just picked it up to talk a little bit about some of these countries. If you pick up Indonesia, you can immediately know how many people there are in Indonesia, and the number is 2,031.6 million people, and those were all parts of the Dutch colonial empire. Now, how big is the Netherlands today? Who knows? Just a second, I want to be exact. I know it, the rough estimate, but I don't know the exact thing. This, the number of people is 16.4 million. Now, imagine if those 200 and some million Indonesians claiming Dutch citizenship appear at the gates of the Dutch consulate general in any country, yes, and say that we want to get in. So this is something which has to be regulated. Otherwise, and I also wanted to hear, and you undoubtedly would have added Belgium to this. Belgium had a large colonial empire, yes, the Congo, for example, in the middle of Africa, belonged to it, but other countries as well. Italy had colonies, Libya, the unfortunate situation in Libya is partly a consequence of Italian presence there, already under Mussolini, and it's a long story, but Libya was Italian for some time. And then also, which other country was Italian? Ethiopia, yes. That's very important because that was one step towards World War II when Ethiopia was overrun in 1935 by Italy. Now, imagine again, and I could find you the numbers, but we are short of time, so I just don't want to... you can always find it in other sources. You can find it on the internet. The easiest thing is to look it up at the internet. And if you just put the total population of Britain and the total population of the British Commonwealth countries today, the total population of France today and the total population of all the French former colonies, etc., you create two columns of figures, then you will be immediately in a position to understand that simply allowing migrants to come into any country is just not possible. It's not even possible for Hungarians. I mean, what if all the 2.5 million Hungarians appear on the at the consulate general of Hungary, who live outside Hungary, saying that they want to live inside Hungary? That's almost next to impossible. So this is a problem which we have to come to terms with, and I think this is a problem for the whole century to come, because migrations is one of the great social movements of this century. It already was a great social movement of the 20th century, but I think this is going to be huge in your lifetime. Why do I think so? Chinese, for example. Chinese, with their 1.5 billion people, will not be content with China itself. And they are already everywhere. I mean, there's a Chinatown in New York City and in San Francisco and also in Budapest there are small settlements of Chinese. And there are Chinese everywhere. And the nature of things is that this will grow. So migrations are inevitable. There is this shrinking or dwindling European population number on the one hand, and then the growth of these other countries on the other, and there will be a spillover that is quite natural. They want to have some space. They will buy their land. They will buy their possibilities into, I mean, the rich people. I'm not talking about the poor people. The poor people will suffer the consequences. So this is something which the European Union will have to keep in mind, that opening up the whole territory, and here is the link between the Schengen Agreement and the migration story, yes? That if you open this up, you have to be extremely vigilant who is coming in and why, and in what documentation. If you go into the United States, you are lost, more or less, from public scrutiny after you entered the United States formally, yes? If you have a visa to the United States, or you don't even have a visa because you are not required to have a visa for a short visit, and you sort of disappear after getting through the border at the airport, or if you go by ship or something, then at that border, once you are through with the authorities at the border, you are gone, you are lost. No one can find you in the United States. They don't ask for a specific address. You don't have to go to the police like in Europe it was customary to do to get their stamp into your whatever document to show that I'm living at this address and that they could find you at that address, etc. This is not done. So if this is not done in Europe also, and I don't think it is done. I think once you are inside the Schengen Agreement area, they couldn't care less about where exactly are you, which country are you in, which address are you at. Don't forget, for example, which is, I think, a very tragic example, that many of the terrorists of 9/11, yes, back in 2001 when they attacked the Twin Towers in New York City, many of those people were trained actually in Hamburg, Germany. And they were trained without any problem. They could have all the resources they wanted, all the logistics, all the database, everything. And then they went on to the United States. Some of them didn't even go to the United States because they were planning only, or they were just preparing things. So this is a dangerous thing if you allow people to walk around and you don't know where they are. Not that everybody is suspicious, not that everybody is a dangerous person, not that everybody is a potential terrorist. This would be very stupid to think, and this is not true. But of course, you don't need too many people to attack four different points in the United States coordinated in the same hour almost. Because you remember perhaps that there were not only the Twin Towers in New York, but also the Pentagon in Washington, and possibly the fourth one was targeting the White House, but that fell somehow before it could reach its final destination. So this needed not too many people to do. I mean, I think 100 people were involved. I may be wrong, because there might be some more people around to develop the whole thing, to plan, to give money, etc., etc. But on the whole, you don't need more than 100 people to do terrible things on Earth. Allegedly, Libya threatened with a nuclear attack shortly before. I don't know whether this is true or this is just a hearsay. Once again, you just need one person to take a nuclear bomb over the territory of any country. It could also be in Europe. And that's the end, more or less, of our world. So we are not talking about large numbers. We are talking about like a needle in the haystack. Yes, who is the person who was dangerous or could be dangerous? And that's the point, not the hundreds of thousands or millions, literally millions. There was a few years ago, there were 40 million people in Hungary, visiting Hungary. That was, I think, in 2007 or 8. I have the statistics in somewhere, and I noticed that it's a huge number. Yes, we don't have trouble with 40 million people. They can just go around and look at Lake Balaton and then go home. But then if there is just one person or one little group or one terrorist-minded person, then this is a real problem. So that's where these border patrols come into the picture. You see the 6,000 I mentioned that were added to the border patrol forces of Hungary through the not the generosity, but through the duty of the European Union, because Hungary cannot produce suddenly 6,000 border patrol people. They need very special equipment. I just came by train yesterday from Vienna, and I looked at the conductor was next to me. He took care of tickets, not my tickets, but somebody else's tickets. And he had a whole series of different gadgets to do that job, all kinds of electric things, computerized, physical things. I mean, this was just fantastic. An ordinary conductor, an ordinary train between two countries, but really not responsible for visas and passports and anything, but just train tickets. Now, what if this is to, is required from a border patrol person? That has to have weapons or access to weapons if necessary, has to have a car, has to have lots of things. All right? So this is the responsibility of the Schengen Agreement countries, the European Union, I would say, excluding the few problem countries that are not members yet, but they will be members, like Romania, I hope, will be a member soon, and that will solve a lot of problems for Hungary. But the problem is that migrations cannot be controlled. This is my major point, you see. They cannot be controlled fully. They can be controlled to some extent. You can remember 100,000 people very well, or you can remember 1 million people through the paperwork you did, but you can't absolutely guarantee that Mr. So-and-so was not there, maybe under a false name or a false identity or something. So I just wanted to point this out because this is our responsibility, this is also your responsibility in some ways, to try and keep this whole situation under control and have a decent and safe future for Hungary as well as the whole European Union at a time when there will be more and more people trying to come for various reasons, to study, to look at the countries, to meet people, to visit family members, all kinds of things. Yes? So I think, and maybe one important thing at the end to emphasize, the European Union is probably going to be stronger and more closed at one point. The ideal structure would be something like the United States today. If you go to the United States, you don't have to have a special permission to go to any of the states. Yes, if you want to go to Georgia, you just take the plane and go to Georgia. If you have enough of Georgia, you go to California, and you don't need anything to go to California. Though some of the states, or I would say most, or probably all of the states, have at least a constitution still. They have a governor. Think of the legendary Arnold Schwarzenegger, yes, and his California time. They have the local leadership in the local capital cities. All 50 states have a capital city. It's not Washington, which is the capital city of each state. Washington is the capital city of the federal system. Yes, and then every, like, for example, Sacramento is a place, probably you never heard of Sacramento, that's the capital city of California. Usually small places, but they are important, and they are, but you don't need anything like a special permission to go to that state. And that is, I think, the ultimate dream, the ultimate ideal in Europe also, that you just enter the European Union and you are in all the 27 or perhaps in the long run more countries. And that is it. There are problems, of course, with that. There was the problem of one man. I did research in American immigration for quite a long time, and I found somebody who was stopped by a policeman in 1937 or 1938 because he was, I think he was not stopping in front of a red light. And then it turned out that he has been illegally living in the United States for 16 years. I vividly remember this case. I saw the documentation of that case. And it was just fantastic that somebody could disappear from the eyes of the authorities for 16 years, and only this tiny mistake he made with the street lamp, with the traffic lamp, sort of revealed him to the authorities. This might very well be the case also in Europe. You see that there will be people who will be here and will pretend to be members of the local community, and you will not be able to find them. to come to a close, I think the European Union, I still think it's a wonderful thing. It's complicated. It doesn't work very well. It's very bureaucratic. It has a lot of problems for almost every participating state. But on the whole, and for the future, this is the way to go. There's no question about that. Yes, so we may not have the simplest system yet. You have got these 21 languages into which every single document is translated into. Yes, it's like a giant factory of translators in working in Brussels and to some extent in Strasbourg too. It has this enormous bureaucracy in Brussels, somewhere between 50 and 100,000 people working for the bureaucracy, either inside Brussels or out of it. This is not the way it should be, I think. But it's going to the right direction nonetheless. And I think we can only hope that for your generation, for your children, this would be a viable way to live in. Thank you very much.